Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. This hour, Lucas Tomlinson will be joining us and bring us the latest on this drone that stayed over 12 sensitive military sites in our country. A sophisticated drone, big drone, easily spotted. And all we did is watch it for 11 to 15 days, and I don't know why we don't shoot it down. I was talking to Brett Velikovich about this. He's a drone expert, and he fought in war, obviously a veteran. He says that there's some laws, so we can't shoot a drone. I mean, the suspicion is it's China. Lucas, so we'll talk about that, and as well as the imminent attack that Israel plans on putting on Iran and the limitations we might have for him. With us right now, though, and by the way, quick announcement, this week, we have welcomed three new stations, WLNA 1420 in Peekskill, New York, where I'll be on Sunday, 7 p.m. I know there's a lot of sports on, but you can take a break at the Paramount, WBNR 1280 a.m. in Beacon, New York, WGHQ 920 a.m. in Kingston, New York, all carrying us live called The Beacon. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This particular letter that we're talking about now follows a relatively recent decrease in humanitarian assistance reaching the people of Gaza, which is obviously something we've been very, very concerned about.
That is John Kirby breached multiple American military bases and sites, have airspace breaches, mysterious drones, 11 days. We watched and did nothing. It's like the spy balloon revisited. Meanwhile, we threaten our ally, Israel, by denying weapons if aid stops in Gaza. And we try to rein in their response to Iran. This is the worst foreign policy administration in my lifetime.
Number two.
Doesn't the Biden administration have to take some blame for the border, though?
No, Charlemagne, within hours of being inaugurated, the first bill we passed before we did the Inflation Reduction Act, first thing we dropped was a bill to fix the broken immigration system.
Totally wrong. The truth. That's what we need from these candidates about their border record and the economy and what their policies will produce, as both Harris and Trump will force to defend their plans. We'll bring it to another level.
Number one.
There's still 3 weeks left to go in this race, and I think it's very clear based on those changing numbers that a lot can still happen, especially when it could be decided by tens of thousands of votes in these battleground states.
Right. Francesca Chambers last night on Special Report. The race, the trail, the message, and the biggest risk to date for the wobbling Democratic nominee. Vice President Harris sits down with our own Bret Baier and Trump with Harris Faulkner on a town hall at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Exciting day on this Wednesday. Let's bring in Bret Baier. He's going to be conducting the interview for Special Report tonight. But, Bret, the way I understand it, you're going to be doing the interview slightly before your show starts?
Yeah, the campaign gave us the time 5 to 5:30, and so we are going to tape the interview then and run it as live, no edits, no changes. We are going to run it in its entirety. The executives at Fox gave me some leeway, and it will not be there won't be any commercial interruptions in the interview. So however long she gives me, 25, 30 minutes, will run uninterrupted and unedited. And then we will take a break and do some analysis with an expanded panel. I've got Britt Hume and Harold Ford and Martha and Dana Perino.
What have you discovered in now that you got the interview? What did you do right after that? I mean, you watch every day. You're engaged 7 days a week. You're on the air 7 days a week virtually. But what did you do to get ready for it? And what roughly, without giving away what you're going to do, did you discover in examining some of her past remarks?
Well, I mean, there's just a lot there. And what I've discovered is there's a lot to talk about, potentially. There's all kinds of issues that have not been delved into on previous interviews or in debates. There's only obviously been one debate. And so there's a lot of territory that I could go down. And, you know, we'll see how she's receptive to kind of moving topic to topic. And it's just kind of a flow thing as far as getting the feeling about the back and forth.
Yeah, so Charlamagne Tha God sat down with him. They've been friends from when she was a DA in Los Angeles. He was thought that he told me that he felt like she was before she was the nominee. He goes, I go, you know, you said you're down about Vice President Harris and you're still on the fence about Biden. And he said, yeah, Vice President Harris has been handcuffed. She's really not allowed to do much. But that's not the way this played out. She never said that. She never said that publicly. I mean, she, for, as far as I know, Joe Biden's record's her record. Do you know any different?
No. And, you know, she's been given a number of opportunities to correct that record and has not as of yet. And, you know, it's a big deal because you have this, you know, these polls that are showing 62% of the country sees the country on the wrong track. So, you know, clearly that's part of the calculation. The Trump folks have come up with an ad based on those comments that she made before. And, you know, it's one of the issues.
I want you to hear what she said when asked about the border and how the facts might be different. Cut 13.
Doesn't the Biden administration have to take some blame for the border, though? A lot of the blame? Because, I mean, the first 3 years, y'all did get a lot of things wrong with the border.
No, Charlamagne, within hours of being inaugurated, the first bill we passed before we did the Inflation Reduction Act, before we did the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, before we did the Safer Communities Act to deal with gun violence, first thing we dropped was a bill to fix the broken immigration system, which, by the way, Trump did not fix when he was president.
Okay. Couple of things on that. Yeah, there was a bill. But that bill was basically a pathway to citizenship bill for 11 million people. And among the conclusions, the New York Times came up with that. The New York Times said that's what this is. That wasn't going to address border security. It wasn't going to address, I mean, nothing about finishing the wall. There were 92 executive orders that they pulled off the books when they got in. And this border bill was offered. What do you know about it? And what qualifications do you think the listeners need to have?
Yeah, you need to know that that bill was going nowhere. They had the control of the White House, the House, and the Senate. Democrats did. And their leadership never brought it up. It was characterized, as you mentioned, by the New York Times and others as essentially an amnesty bill, an eight-year path to 11 million illegal immigrants in the country getting citizenship. And, you know, it was called the U.S. Citizen Act. Let me see what it was called.
The U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was essentially this pathway. It had some stuff in there about the border, but not much. And Democrats did not bring up the bill. And more importantly, the White House didn't push for it. So, you know, she says right away they dropped this bill. That's not the issue. You know, the issue is right away they rescinded 94 executive orders that turned Trump border policies around. So, you know, those are the real things, the decisions, the policy decisions that were made.
Right. I was shocked by her. I'm not going to play it. But when she said she's going to study reparations as a president, studying reparations, we saw what happened. They're studying in New York. We saw they study in San Francisco. They're studying in California and they see the number and they see the practicality of it and they walk away from it. I mean, that's got it. I mean, that's, in my view, flat out pandering, because there's no way we can do national reparations almost 200 years since slavery was legal in this country.
Yeah. It's interesting that she said that she should study it before, but by saying it should be studied, it means that she's considering something that she'd support. You know, that reparations have all kinds of estimates, but anywhere from $10 to $19 trillion. Trillion with a T. So how, you know, do we figure out if you're going to do that, how to pay for it? How is it fair? How does it work? I mean, it's just a real real hornet's nest. You know, but there are other things that she has said in the past and supported, like the Green New Deal. That had a price tag of anywhere between $50 and $93 trillion. So, you know, these are all things, but she's saying that this week, and that's a bigger deal.
So with Charlamagne the God has the Breakfast Club, he did that, and then he did the 5 o'clock thing for iHeart, who owns his show, and he's an owner, too. He's got about five podcasts. Here's what he said. I think this is interesting. It came out in the Brilliant Idiot podcast that he has. Cut 20.
There's nothing about the poll numbers that we're seeing right now that should make anybody feel like she got this in there.
Remember those poll numbers with Hillary?
Remember those poll numbers with Hillary? And I keep telling people this campaign feels more Hillary-ish than it does Obama-ish.
I almost feel as though Obama feels the same way, and which is why his veins were popping out of his neck last week talking to black men on the campaign trail.
Yeah, and that seemed to boomerang. It didn't seem to do well. In fact, there's a lot of pushback about, you know, what he said and how he said it. And then for the campaign to put out this list of specifically targeted policies towards black men, well, it seemed pandering. And then there's the question of constitutionality, if it's only for black men. Anyway, I think you're right. It's and Charlamagne the God is right in that this is as close as we've ever seen it. This is tighter than we've ever seen an election. All these swing states within a point or two, the national polls really, really tight, and there's never been a time when one candidate was up 5 or 10 points. We have seen that in Hillary Clinton in 2016, in Joe Biden in 2020, and other races before that. The fact that it's so tight means that anything could change the dynamic in the last, you know, 18 to 20 days.
Here's the biggest question. Don't have to answer, obviously. Brett, you have the ability to parry or just say no. But the question on the president is cognitive deterioration. I mean, we know what we see. If it wasn't happening, there's nobody would have pushed with those numbers. There's no reason for Biden to drop out if it wasn't for something physical and his age, him wearing out before our eyes. No one's ever come out and said that. When the Wall Street Journal wrote that 2 weeks before the debate, they were eviscerated by it. Then it became conventional wisdom, but no one ever says it. So either he's George Washington or he's having huge problems and they had no choice but to get rid of him. We don't have a clear explanation why how she's the nominee. Do you?
Yeah. And listen, we are just weeks from the time where former Speaker Nancy Pelosi was defending President Biden to the point where she said he's such a great president and so active he should be on Mount Rushmore. It's ironic that she was the one or one of the ones that led to his demise and the party to kind of escort him out. I get all of these things that, you know, he's being lifted up as making this choice and it's George Washington-esque. But you don't feel that when you talk to Biden aides privately. You feel like there's a little animus there, and I think it's been popping up in different reports all over the place.
So I remember talking to Chris Wallace, and he told me that he's interviewing Bill Clinton, and you remember the interview. And Clinton said to him, you sit there with that little smile on your face, and you make these glum comments, and he started blowing up at him. And I asked Chris Wallace, what were you thinking? And he said, I'm thinking I got myself a heck of a story here. Do you think that, like, when you, if she comes out like a tiger and starts ripping the network, going back and forth, or ripping you personally, do you, is that how you think? Do you think to yourself, okay, this is actually going to be, this is going to be a bigger story? Like, you can only ask the questions. You can't control the tone of her answers and her attitude going in or out.
Right. I can control my tone.
Yeah.
And I can control, you know, saying that we've invited her here to talk to voters who are making a decision. And it's about her policies and her, you know, pitch to America. You know, I'm not running for president. Fox News is not running for president. She is.
And lastly, can I make a prediction?
Mm-hmm.
My prediction, she tries to win the audience over, that she comes out, answers the questions, that she does not come out like a house on fire, if I could take a Vince McMahon statement from wrestling. I think that she comes out and says, Brett, thanks so much. I'm glad we were able to work this out. Let's go. Because I think she wants to charm, not charm you, but I think she wants to charm our audience saying I'm okay. That's my prediction.
Yeah. So basically, I have these giant murder boards that go through each possibility. And we'll see. We'll see. It should be good. I mean, listen, I'm grateful for the time. I'm grateful the campaign decided to do it. And I realize there's all kinds of speculation on social media about how it'll go, what I'll ask. I did get literally thousands and thousands of questions, some really good ones, that a couple of them will make it into the mix.
Yeah. Have you had your stylist pick out an outfit?
Oh, I'm going nondescript. You know, I can't go away from the blue suit. That's all I have.
Blue suit, red tie. That's my prediction. Hey, Brett, thanks so much for the time. It'll be great tonight. I look forward to it.
Thanks, Brett.
So does our audience. 1-866-408-7669. So I'm just looking through this bill that they put out there. So I think this is, understand, anytime she brings up the border, because it's such a blatant weakness, it's self-inflicted wound, lasted 3.5 years, and we all are bleeding because of it. Whole country. Because not just Republicans, because you look at New York, look at Chicago, look at Philadelphia, look at Aurora, look at Denver, look everywhere. Springfield, we just got this small town in Indiana is now overrun. This is all because of their ridiculous border policies where they couldn't care less about America security or how many illegals came in here. And they say, well, we put out an immigration reform plan. Congress didn't pass it. It was Democratic House and Senate. And then they said, well, there was a bipartisan deal, but Donald Trump killed it. Do you know that 7 Democrats voted against it? Do you know that 30 Republicans were not for it? One thought it was too left. One thought it was too right. And Trump was convinced it's bad. And the more you look at it, Langford had to give up a lot. There's no provision for unaccompanied minors. They're not going to build up the wall. There was no return to Mexico. So I'm going to come back and take your calls on that. We kind of know the answers. She's never been pressed on the answers. We're about to find. This could make or break the election, I think. Back in a moment.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Scott, you're in the Villages. Oh, the Villages over in Florida. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, hey, where am I? Hey, I think she's going on Brett Baer. I think what she's going to do is they finally realize they're going to have to distance themselves from Biden and everything he's done. And I think she's going to take this opportunity to do the best she can to try, not trash Biden, but try to make the case that she's just not Joe Biden.
But like, Scott, don't you think she would have done that with Charlemagne, a much friendlier venue that would give her plenty of time on radio to talk about where there's difference?
Not necessarily, because she's preaching to the choir over there. Brett Baer's she's got to convince your listeners to peel off. Thanks, Brett.
All right. I think so, but I don't know if that'll do it. I think a couple of things. I know there's a theory out there, and it's from someone very higher up, that she's going to come out loaded for Baer, that Brett Baer. And she's going to be like, you know, I watch you guys say things inaccurate about me. I just had to come on here and straighten out the record. I'm not this horrible person that's incompetent. I'm a very successful woman that's won 5 straight off. That type thing, like sanctimoniously, I don't think so. Because that doesn't win anybody over. And even if she walks out and her staff goes, high five, Vice President, she's got to be charming. Have answers to questions. Why are you for fracking? What happened to the new Green Deal? What happened to Medicare for All? Why did you sit out when Prime Minister Netanyahu comes here, joint session of Congress?
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't know why this topic, frankly, hasn't gotten more coverage. I mean, what, this happened over 17 times? I mean, these surveillance drones, really, they're designed to gather pattern of life on the target, to see where we are vulnerable, to understand what happened over there. And frankly, I believe that this was a foreign government testing us, testing our responses. They wanted to see if they can get away with it, and they did. Remember the Chinese spy balloon circling our atmosphere that took our government years to figure out? foreign adversaries, they can easily control these drones from thousands of miles away through special technical relays that allow them to surveil our most important military sites. And frankly, this needs to be a wake-up call for this administration.
Brett Velikovich, who fights in the war, was a drone expert, fought in the Army, went over to Ukraine, helped out too. He said UFO drones, well, this is the story, are spying on U.S. military bases, including a fleet that breached U.S. airspace over Virginia's Langley Air Force Base for 17 days. Still no answer. Evidently, they had repeated meetings about this. Is it China? Is it Russia? Is it Iran? Is it North Korea? Is it some hobbyist? We don't know. And for some reason, we can't shoot down. I was talking in the break to Brett. I go, Brett, I don't understand why we're shooting it down. If it is friendly, if it is American, it's their problem, not ours. Lucas Tomlinson joins us now. He's been covering this story, and we're going to talk to him about what's happening with Gaza, this administration, and Israel's imminent attack on Iran. Lucas, what could you tell us? How could you expand this story for our listeners who are hearing it for the first time?
Well, Brian, I think most of our listeners know that these drones are everywhere, not just some of these drones flying over sensitive U.S. military sites. And by the way, Brian, just for our listeners, so you talk about Langley, you're talking about some of the most concentrated areas where U.S. forces are based. You know, you got SEAL Team 6 there at Damneck. You've got the largest naval base in the world, Naval Station Norfolk. You've got Langley. That's where the Air Force's Air Combat Command is based. You've got F-22s there, including, there's just a lot of military firepower. There's stuff there that, and also we build, you know, ships there and submarines, which, by the way, the U.S. is lacking right now in attack submarines. We can get to that later. People see drones flying around. Just the other day, I was at my son's baseball practice. I look up, there's a drone flying over. So this is a cheap, crude system. Now, we heard earlier from Brett talking about why can't you shoot these things down? You know, the next question is with what? Some of this technology that, for example, the Marines used, remember, to down that Iranian drone off the deck of the USS Kearsarge, I believe, in the Persian Gulf a couple years ago. This is sensitive stuff, and also it's not built in mass quantities. You know, not to segue to Israel here, but think about the THAAD battery that just deployed to Israel. There's only 7 of those deployed around the world. So a lot of these systems that people are asking, well, where's this? Where's that? The U.S. military just doesn't spend like it used to. There's been 4 years of budget cuts when you can account for inflation in the Biden-Harris administration. You look at the threats around the world, there's no shortage of them. In fact, most would argue are bigger now, especially with this North Korea, China, Russia, Iran axis. And so when it comes back to the drones, I'll bring it back here to these bases. In terms of this anti-drone technology, you don't need, you know, the Iron Dome to protect against drones. What you need is you know, electronics, electronic warfare, almost like a – almost like the Halloween decorations I put in front of my house, so you can have a magic wand that turns it on, turns it off. You could do the same thing with those little drones, having the equivalent of like a magic wand to turn them off. But again, this needs to be a priority, and the fact that these drones are flying over sensitive sites is a real problem.
Right. I would think we're able to shoot down a drone. I mean, are we doing it over the Red Sea?
Disconnect the signal. You get some, then that's a different story. But those are, you know, $1 million crude drones that the Iranians are supplying the Houthis in there in Yemen and the Red Sea. The U.S. Navy is launching $1 million, $2 million missiles to shoot them down. That's an exchange that is not good long term. And just to put another fine point on it, these SM-3 interceptors that just launched on the two warships to shoot down incoming Iranian ballistic missiles, you know, those are, you know, much millions of dollars each. And oh, by the way, the U.S. military only makes, or the defense industry only makes 12 of those a year. So the fact that the U.S. military just shot its entire, you know, stable, if you will, of these missiles. But that's the problem. In terms of the drones, you can use microwave technology. You can use electronics. You don't have to actually physically with a fragmentary warhead destroy the drone. You just cut it off. Again, it's like the light switch, or it's like a TV remote. You turn on and off your TV. You can do the same thing with drones.
Okay. So that the fact that they went 11 days, that didn't come up with anything, and that you got closer to solving the problem than they did, scares me. And it's just nuts. It's very similar to the hesitation with the spy balloon. And they couldn't make a decision, act like they did a great thing, tracking it as it went across our country before shooting it down. And then China gets mad at us for shooting their spy balloon. So I want to talk about the threat that we have against the Israelis, who are thinking about slowing down or stopping aid to Gaza because they're not able to get this last battalion out. of Hamas? Your thoughts?
Well, it's certainly, I mean, this is what happens when insurgencies go below ground. In this case, there's a tunnel system below Gaza that's three times as long as the D.C. Metro, not quite as big as the New York subway system, but it is very, very extensive. And there's no question Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, has human shields. He has some of the 100 hostages remaining, including seven Americans. There's no question he has some of those around him, and he's gone deep underground ferreting this out. It's like looking for insects, you know, under your house. I mean, they're everywhere, and it takes a lot of time and effort. So that's the problem there. Now, it does seem like this deployment that the Biden administration just okayed of this THAAD anti-ballistic missile system that just went in, it does appear, not confirmed, but it does appear that there are some conditions attached to this, because we heard President Biden say he does not want Israel striking Iran's nuclear sites. He doesn't want them striking the oil. And then all of a sudden we hear about this THAAD deployment, also shortage of interceptors. Now, this THAAD system, for listeners who don't know, this is very similar to the Israeli Arrow 2 system. It's very complex. It's used to shoot down ballistic missiles, not just in our atmosphere, but in space. We've heard a lot about Iron Dome. That's like point defense, last second. That's for rockets, incoming mortars, artillery that we've seen to great success with Hezbollah and in Gaza. But when Iran is firing ballistic missiles, and according to the local reports in Israel, they're running low on some of these Arrow interceptors. That's why the THAAD went in. But back to Gaza, this is an area about twice the size of Washington, D.C. It's not huge, but it's not – we're not talking about a few city blocks here. So it is going to take some time. But as we've seen from the White House, there's a lot more pressure now building once again to feed people in Gaza, despite some people saying that it should be Hamas feeding its own people.
So here's what John Kirby said yesterday about the concerns the president has on the Iranian strike and more. Cut 36.
The president has been very consistent in expressing our concerns to the Israelis about humanitarian assistance getting in to Gaza. And certainly he's mindful of our efforts to communicate those concerns to the Israelis, whether that communication is, as I said, done orally or in writing. So this is not an issue. This is not an effort. This is not an initiative that that the president was at all surprised by.
But why it went in the Washington Post intentionally that they've ruled out hitting the nuclear sites or the oil sites, saying that we know that came from the administration from a private conversation that helps build distrust between the two allies.
And President Biden said it himself to reporters. He does not want to see Israel take out the nuclear sites. He doesn't want to see him take out oil sites. Now, some would argue is the reason why he doesn't want to see oil terminals get blown up. What would that do to the price of gas with less than a month to go in an election year? It certainly would drive up prices. In terms of going after the nuclear sites, it's clear that some administration officials are fearful of some kind of wider war, hence the THAAD deployment. And that's where we are now, Brian.
So we know, too, that they, after a 6-day pause, there's now bombing once again in Lebanon. How much damage have they done? And do you think the Israelis were surprised that there was a return drone swarm?
Hezbollah, you've seen all these rockets coming out of Gaza. Well, here's the problem. Hezbollah has a rocket and missile inventory that's 3 to 4 times larger. They have more advanced weapons. Years ago, Jennifer Griffin and I reported about GPS kits that the Iranians had sent into Lebanon to put on some of these missiles, making them much more accurate. Now, thank goodness for Iron Dome and to some extent David's Sling, which is very similar to the U.S. Patriot system, be able to knock down some of these intermediate range and short range rockets and missiles. You know, the problem is you don't need long range, intermediate range. We're talking about Lebanon to Israel. It's just over the border. And despite wiping out Hezbollah's leadership, we continue almost on a daily basis see a lot of these short range rockets being fired into Israel. In terms of the 5-day pause, most likely Israel is just looking for more targets, Brian.
All right. Okay. I guess we'll see what happens. Lastly, I hear there's a diplomatic effort to try to get Lebanon to hold elections and have non-Hezbollah candidates rise to the top. So Lebanon, who's been taken over by Hezbollah, that hasn't had an election since president since 2022, might get some Lebanese leadership. Where do you think that's at? How much hope is there?
The problem, Brian, is Hezbollah is within the government of Lebanon. You know, 20-30% of parliamentary seats are held by Hezbollah politicians. It's part of the culture. It's part of the society. We keep reading stories in Lebanon, people who want Hezbollah out. Sadly, Hezbollah, it's facts on the ground. They're a party. They almost like the mob. They do, you know, work in the community. You know, they pay, you know, the food, shelter, clothing. They also, of course, are a terrorist organization. They killed our Marines in the Beirut barracks bombing in 1983. They hit the embassy that year, and also many people are talking about this, but they hit the embassy annex again in 84. So we just honored the 40th anniversary of that as well. Hezbollah is here to stay in terms of rooting out and destroying the group. It's going to take a lot of time and effort. In terms of holding elections right now, sadly, the history does not show that in the middle of a war is probably the best time for an election, Brian.
Well, I guess we're going to see. I want you to, last week before you go, get your perspective, because you not only report the news, you also have perspective on the region, with also with your military background. Cut 37, General Jack Keane.
The one thing we can settle on is likely to be a robust attack. Remember, the last time it was a very minimal attack just on air defense capabilities outside a nuclear enterprise, Natanz. In terms of the selection, I mean, they have conventional military targets, and there's plenty of those, obviously rocket and missile forces, which are attacking them. Yes, they have economic targets, and energy infrastructure is a part of that. When they look at that target, one of the things they have to consider is they recognize full well that the regime, the Khamenei regime, is very fragile and probably its most vulnerable since its existence.
So he sees this as an historic opportunity. Lucas, I'm older than you. Really, my whole adult, my young life to my current life, Iran's been a problem.
Sure.
And this is the most vulnerable that they've been. And Israel is responsible for this, and they've taken blows for this. Why not do the region a favor and diminish them?
That's what the former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has said on air many times, that, you know, Iran is the octopus here, and you can go after Hamas, you can go after Hezbollah. Those are just the tentacles on the octopus. You got to cut off its head and slay the beast. There's no question there are some hawks that want this to happen and for Israel to unleash hell on Iran. Whether the Biden administration is giving them the green light for that, I think we know the answer to that already. And I just keep going back to this THAAD deployment. It does appear, Brian, that there were some conditions associated with that deployment. Whether that means, I don't have enough reporting on this for now, but does that mean that there's been some guarantees that Israel will not go strike the nuclear sites or oil terminals? Another package to consider, to go off of what General Keane was saying, is Iran's ballistic missile capability. Obviously, you can't hide a ballistic missile. The Israelis, of course, know where they're built. They know where they're stored. Not everything is below ground. Certainly taking out Iran's ballistic missile capability go a long way to protecting the state of Israel, Brian.
All right, and lastly, we're getting reports from Newsweek that North Korean troops are now in the theater fighting with the Russians, and some are defecting to Ukraine. I think that even the one defecting or not, which I'm sure it's taking place, who would want to live there and wouldn't see this as an opportunity to get on with your life? But Kiev says there's 10,000 North Koreans. That's a huge force. This is becoming like a World War report for duty.
Right. That's like a division of North Korean regulars now fighting on the ground in Ukraine, or at least starting their training in Russia. The biggest problem over the last 2 years since Russia launched this full-scale invasion, Brian, is you now have Russia's allies growing. They're getting electronics. They're getting capability from China. They're getting ballistic missiles from North Korea. They're getting drones from Iran. And it's putting a lot of pressure on the West. There's nobody right now that would say that Ukraine is winning. The war has been at a stalemate for at least a year, and that's a big problem. And there are men like Senator Roger Wicker, the top Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee, who says the U.S. needs to put its money where its mouth is when it comes to defense spending, and wants to ramp up defense spending to Reagan-level eras. 5% of the U.S. economy should be going to defense, because if you want to support Ukraine, which many of our listeners do, you got to pay for it. You can't just be depleting U.S. military stockpiles. You got to ramp up defense spending, because there's China. There's Iran. We have 40,000 troops in the Middle East, the Lincoln Carrier Strike Group. By the way, Tihar just came home. We should say welcome home to the crew of the USS Theodore Roosevelt. That strike group is at sea for 9 months, got extended from the Pacific, put over in the Middle East. But if you want to pay for all this, you've got to ramp up defense spending. There's been constant cuts.
Great point, Lucas. Great job. Consequential time. Whoever the next president is, it's got to make these decisions, and I hope they go with Senator Wicker's conclusion. Thanks so much, Lucas. Back in a moment.
You bet, Brian. Thank you.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I never liked pandas, and not even bears. I found that the marsupials.
Oh,
he likes penguins?
Right.
You're a penguin guy?
I only like certain packing pandas.
Pandas are not marsupials. That means they have a pouch, like a kangaroo.
They might have a pouch. Steve, can
they
you check?
Might.
No, they're just a stomach.
You don't know.
They might have a pouch.
Our pandas.
They carry, they got pockets.
Our pandas bears.
Right.
No.
Let's see.
No.
They're not bears.
Known as a panda bear, is bear species native to China. They are known for their black and white coloring. But I'll get to the bottom of this. I don't think they're marsupials, though.
They're not bears.
So it turns out, according to our fact checker, Carly Shimkus, she says they are bears, and they were found to be bears in the 80s. I was heard they're not bears. They're more koala, which are bears, which is like not really an accurate way to describe a koala.
But they're still bears.
I don't think so. Do you think they're bears, Eric?
They are.
Are you sure?
Bob on Facebook sent this helpful comment. The giant panda belongs to the family Ursidae, which is the bear family.
Is that the name of one bear family?
No, that's the bear family.
Ursidae?
Yeah.
Who named it Ursidae?
Did you not take biology in school?
We didn't learn pandas. Believe me. I mean, there's number one, way too much attention on pandas. Number two, we just got them back from China. I mean, they gave us new ones. When we have them, there's nothing to prevent us from having them mate so we could have our own and we can stop asking for this lend-lease program from China. Have you thought about that, Eric?
Can I just say this, though, just to steal that from Eric? I don't think I've ever heard you be more offended by something Lawrence said. Can we just listen to the first, 5 seconds of this cut again?
Yeah. I never liked pandas.
You were horrified that he thought you liked pandas.
I thank you for picking that up. It's absolutely true.
I actually agree with you, Brian. I don't like pandas either, but they're still bears. I know.
I'm telling you, there's a counter narrative to this, Eric, and you have to be open to being wrong. I know you don't never think you're wrong. I think you might be wrong.
Where did you get marsupials?
I'm not sure. Listen, I want to see everybody. October, this Sunday, 7 p.m. in Peekskill, New York. Even if you don't live there, start driving now. BrianKilmeade.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, heard around the world. You're listening to a show that I think has been one-stop shopping when it comes to what's happening with this election and more. Special thanks. It's been a great week as we welcome in three more stations to this network. Brian Kilmeade Show, WLNA, 1420 in Peekskill, New York, where I'm going to be on Sunday at 7 p.m. with History, Liberty, and Laugh Show on stage. I know you got a lot of sports things to do in New York, but go upstate, have a good time. It's an unbelievable drive, and I'll see you in person, BrianKilmeade.com. BNR is right there, 1260 a.m. in Beacon, New York, WGHQ, 920 a.m. in Kingston. All three are now on board. Big hour coming your way. Garrett Ventry is going to be here. He's the president of GRV Strategies, political expert, former senior advisor to Senator Chuck Grassley and more. And Tom Bonnier, Target Smart CEO. He's got a real sense of where this election is heading. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This particular letter that we're talking about now follows a relatively recent decrease in humanitarian assistance reaching the people of Gaza. Which is obviously something we've been very, very concerned about.
Breached. Multiple American military bases and sites have airspace breached by mysterious drones for 11 days. We watched and did nothing. We met and did nothing. It reminds me of the spy balloon, just letting it go across the country. Meanwhile, We threaten our ally, Israel, by denying weapons if aid stops to Gaza and try to rein in their response to Iran. This is the worst foreign policy administration in my lifetime.
Number two.
Doesn't the Biden administration have to take some blame for the border, though?
No, Charlemagne, within hours of being inaugurated, the first bill we passed before we did the Inflation Reduction Act, first thing we dropped was a bill to fix the broken immigration system.
Yeah, that was so inaccurate. And that's why we need the truth. That's why we need it from the candidates, especially about their border record, especially about the economy and what their policies will produce, as both Harris and Trump were forced to defend their plans and will today as well.
Number one.
There's still 3 weeks left to go in this race, and I think it's very clear based on those changing numbers that a lot can still happen, especially when it could be decided by tens of thousands of votes in these battlegrounds.
Francesca Chambers weighing in from USA Today. The race, the trail, the message, and biggest risk to date for the wobbling Democratic nominee who was riding so high this summer. VP Harris sits down with our own Bret Baier and Trump with Harris Faulkner in a town hall, all women. Tom Bonnier joins us now, Target Smart CEO. Target Smart's a firm that analyzes voter data, and we need every edge we can get, Tom, to make sense of this. First off, thanks for joining us. And do you believe, like most of the other experts, that this is too close to call?
Yeah, it's great to be back with you. I do. This is the closest election that we've seen in, well, look, as long as we've had as much polling and as data as we've had, which is a very long time, we haven't seen one this close.
How do you do your work? How do you operate your, what's your method?
Well, what we do is we collect all sorts of data above and beyond the polling. So we're bringing in voter registration data. We're looking at the early vote data now, which is probably the most rich data set. And then we're pairing that up with the polls. We have to keep in mind that the polls are going to tell us a lot about how people are voting. But the bigger question now is who's voting. And so we know that's a very rich data set. In 2020, over 100 million Americans voted before Election Day, and we have data on who they are. It's important to clarify, we don't know how they voted. The secret ballot is a sacred thing. But we know who they are. And on our voter file, we have a lot of data about those individuals. I don't think the early vote turnout will be as high as it was in 2020 because of the impact of the pandemic, but it's still going to be many tens of millions of Americans voting before Election Day.
The Secretary of State said the Georgia vote, which early voting started yesterday, has set a new record for early voting. As of 3:30 in the afternoon yesterday, they had 137,000 ballots. They had 224,000 ballots. Last time they had 100, in 2020 they had 137,000. So it's pretty impressive. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, well, you know, the question that we've had all along is we know that 2020 set a record. It was the highest turnout in over a century. And we've had an open question in this election how high turnout will be. You know, I think frankly when we were a few months ago looking at a rematch of 2020. We saw a lot of Americans just frankly weren't very excited about that. It looked like we were going to have lower turnout. That's changed. And those numbers you cite out of Georgia are some of our best evidence that, frankly, voters are fired up everywhere, especially in these battleground states. But really everywhere we're seeing these big numbers. So I don't know that we will break that record, but it's in play at this moment.
Right. So you write the actual new voter registration in Pennsylvania, you tweet out, since VP Harris became the nominee, quite evenly split, where during the same period of time in 2020, the GOP had a 7-point advantage among new registrants. And we know that as far as the registration, it's been getting closer and closer. More Republicans are creeping up on Democrats in overall registration, right?
That's right. You know, it's been sort of a tale of two elections in a way where you look at really from the beginning of Biden's presidency in 2021 up until, frankly, July 21st, where he withdrew from the race and endorsed the vice president. Republicans were putting up bigger numbers in voter registration in places like Pennsylvania, certainly, but also, you know, North Carolina, Florida, other key states. We've seen a bit of a swing since then, which is frankly a lot of Democrats who weren't as excited prior to that change, you know, coming out and perhaps making up for lost time. And so you've seen those numbers get closer. You know, a big question is there enough time for Democrats to make up that gap? We do know that a lot of new voter registration happens in these closing weeks, depending on the state. Some states have actually already closed their voter registration. Some will allow people to register right through Election Day. But it's been back and forth, and it's certainly reflected in those new voter registration numbers in Pennsylvania. And again, it's indicative of both sides being pretty fired up at the moment.
Right. And we'll see how many to choose to get out early and get it out of the way or get known. So when you say you don't know who they voted for, can you get hard numbers or just exit poll numbers on who they voted for? Do you just ask people as they leave who you vote for and hope they're being honest?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. In the end, the best indicator will be when we get the actual results. I'm not a huge believer in exit polls. They're helpful. It's a helpful data set. But, you know, as we know, everything is fraught. People are not always going to be confident in sharing that sort of information, especially to a stranger. So exit polls are helpful. You know, we talk about Pennsylvania, some of these other key states. We have partisan voter registration data, and we know who's voted. In Pennsylvania, over 500,000 people have already cast a ballot by mail. And so having partisan registration is helpful, in some ways more helpful than that exit poll data, because we know there's not a ton of crossover voting at the moment. Registered Democrats are overwhelmingly voting for Democrats, and Republicans are doing the same for Donald Trump. So that data by itself is a very rich data set.
So I want you to hear what Brian Moynihan said he thinks about the voter. You know, he's the Bank of America CEO. Cut 10.
The issues are with people where inflation hits the hardest, or the rise in prices hit the hardest, and don't have the wage growth to offset it. And that's where the toughest parts are. And so while the general economy is doing well and the general consumer is doing well, there are pockets, not in our credit quality, where you see some credit quality deterioration.
Are you seeing that?
Yeah, well, look, inflation has been one of the top issues in this election, along with immigration and abortion rights. And so it's, you know, when you look at the polls, you see sort of a mixed bag. You know, generally, Donald Trump has had the lead. Voters who say they're concerned about the economy and inflation are much more likely to vote for Donald Trump. People who say they're more concerned about democracy, abortion rights, more likely to vote for Vice President Harris. So it's certainly in play. But again, the polls are, you know, as they are in the race in general, they swing a little bit. You know, there have been some polls that show that more voters trust the vice president on the economic issues, but many more showing the opposite.
Right. So obviously abortion goes and women go to Harris. The question is by how much. Men, border immigration and the economy go to Trump. The question is by how much, and is that going to be the difference, a gender election? I want you to hear what Howard Enten said of CNN about what he's seeing. Cut 22.
Party ID nationally. You go to October, November of 2016, Democrats had a 3-point advantage. You go 4 years ago, Democrats had a 6-point advantage. Look at where we are today, Manu. Republicans with a 1-point advantage. A very different picture, very much mirroring what we see in the party registration numbers in those key battleground states, and Pennsylvania in particular. The GOP leads by a point in party identification right now. The average when the Republican Party loses is the Democrats ahead by 8. When the Republican Party wins, the average party ID advantage for Democrats is 3. Republicans right now, Manu, are doing even better than the average when they win. If there's one little nugget that I think Republicans are really hopeful for, it's this party ID and this party registration data. It really points in a good direction for them and for Donald Trump.
Tom, what about you at Target Smart?
Well, this is a tricky one, and this is something that we haven't seen in the polling before, at least in quite some time, because those numbers he cites, they're asking Americans with which party do they identify. And it's generally a good sign of where the intensity lies. It's not uncommon for the party that is not in the White House to have an advantage. But that poll, it's the Gallup poll. It's the gold standard of these things. And they actually showed in mid-September Republicans with a 5-point advantage. And then late September, just 2 weeks later, they showed Democrats with a 4-point advantage. So it's all over the map. I don't know what to make of it, to be honest, at the moment, other than, again, you know, not to be a broken record here, but you're seeing high levels of intensity from both parties. Mm-hmm. It's also, let's keep in mind, harder and harder to field accurate polls at the moment. When you see all of them pointing in generally the same direction, which is a very close and competitive election, I think you have to believe it. But from that party ID perspective, look, there's good signs for Democrats in terms of intensity and enthusiasm from voter registration data, some of the early early vote data. And then there's good sign for Republicans in terms of some of these party ID polls and new voter registration prior to July 21st. So you can really pick your path here.
How do you think, do you have things at Target Smart that give us an idea of what happened since September? That if you just look at the candidates' actions, you have Kamala Harris suddenly doing a press conference today. She is doing a interview with Brett later on tonight. And then yesterday doing Charlemagne the God unscripted. And you see how she went and did her media blitz last week to mediocre if failing results. Having said that, something was revealed to them. If I'm looking at her new picked up pace, that shows that either she's trailing or Trump is surging. Do you think the same thing?
You know, it's hard to read the tea leaves on these things. I think they've learned something from the sort of energy they got at the beginning of this race. You know, it's hard now. These campaigns are long and slogging affairs. And so I think part of this was just a calculation that they wanted to make their biggest push in the last few weeks here. But
these are late decisions. These are late decisions to Brett. I mean, they literally said it Monday.
Right. So, understood. I think they're seeing the same things that everyone's seen in the poll. I don't think either side of this race should have a great level of confidence that they're going to walk away with it. I think they're all going to do everything they can and leave everything on the table. I think you're seeing that from her campaign. They know it's close, and they're going to do everything they can and appeal to every voter they can. I think that speaks to them widening the circle at this point. It also suggests that they've seen something in their data that suggests they have an opportunity with Fox News viewers.
Absolutely. We always said that. I mean, it's just whether you like us or not, we're the biggest audience, bigger than ESPN, bigger than TBS, bigger than the Cartoon Network, whatever you want. We're number one network in streaming and in cable. Why would you turn down a minimum of 6 million viewers, 3 million without her, maybe 6 million when she comes on, maybe even more. It beats buying a 30-second ad nationally, I think. But lastly, Tom, what about the black vote? We hear so much about it. I heard a lot about it in 2020 how Trump was making inroads, and he did better than Romney. You know, he did better than George W. Bush. I get it, John McCain. But where do you think this is right now? Because when you saw the anger that President Obama brought to the stump last week, there was something he was seeing.
Yeah, you know, certainly. I mean, Donald Trump did better, as you said, than Romney. I mean, part of that was the comparison to, you know, Romney was running against the first black president. So, of course, those numbers are going to be a little bit different. But no doubt, Donald Trump did make some inroads. This is another area where the polls are a little bit all over the map. You know, I trust Howard University did a national survey of black voters that was not just a small sample. It was a couple thousand black voters across the battlegrounds. And they showed the numbers pretty much in line with where they were in 2020. I do think when you saw what President Obama was talking about, if there is a concern there, it's black men and maybe younger black men. And so I think that's why you're seeing that focus. You mentioned the Charlemagne interview. I think that was a part of that as well. So I don't think it's not a concern, but in terms of the numbers we're seeing, I think there's a realistic opportunity for the vice president to, at a minimum, match the numbers from 4 years ago, if not do a little bit better.
Right. I just do think she's doing better. If she's mad about black men with Kamala Harris, she must have been really mad about Joe Biden, because Joe Biden, by all metrics, was doing worse with blacks, the black voter, than she was. So I don't know if it's a sexist thing. I was a little taken aback by it. I don't know how much that worked, yelling at people that you should pay attention to gender and race.
Yeah, well, in the end, I think it was effective in some circles. We'll see. We'll see in a couple weeks here.
All right, so still right now, Tom, you're saying too close to call.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anyone who feels confident about this race is probably fooling themselves.
All right, Tom Bonnier with Target Smart. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You got it. When we got back, I want to take your calls. Where do you think this is? What do you expect tonight in the interview and from Harris's town hall? Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There are signs Harris might struggle to turn out black men, as a higher number are signaling interest in former President Donald Trump.
A lot of black males are not into the Harris campaign. And I think this should have been done a while ago. We have tens of thousands of people that do not intend to vote and don't give a damn about Kamala, Trump, or anyone else because they don't see how this campaign, this candidacy makes one bit of difference in their lives.
This group knows they need to explain the differences between Harris and Trump.
Gut check. Is she going to win?
I believe she's going to nearly pull it off.
I believe she's going to win.
I think it's touch and go right now. I see shades of the Hillary Clinton campaign with the arrogance of a Democratic Party out of touch with the electorate.
I believe she's going to win.
Well, we'll see. She's not acting like she's going to win, and she certainly doesn't have the schedule of someone either knows they're going to win or knows they're going to lose because it's not too busy. Although today, I understand she is doing a joint press conference. The other thing is, there's no proof that she ever worked at McDonald's. It's all part of a narrative. It's beginning to go away because Trump is calling her on it. And Trump will now work at McDonald's next week and learn to drop fries. Listen, cut eight.
You know what I'm doing next week? I'm going to a McDonald's to work. Because if I work there for 10 minutes, I will have worked there longer than her.
So, Allison, I was telling you, I could back up all my jobs that I had. Bennigan's, at the restaurants that are still open, but I was at Bennigan's for the longest time. I was at a catering hall that just closed recently. I guess no proof of that. The wine store, the liquor store also is out of business. But where is her friends? Where are her friends? Go, yeah, we work together. We cast a check together. Where's McDonald's saying, yeah, she's on her payroll? No one can find that she worked there. You know, she doesn't bring that up anymore.
So you want us to go find one of her friends at McDonald's and book them for the
show?
Because
I could find my friends from Bennigan's.
You have so many.
You just
friends.
Can't find Bennigan's.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If I run this country, if I'm going to be president of this country, I'm going to put a 100, 200, 2,000% tariff. They're not going to sell one car into the United States because we're not going to destroy our country. Because I know you're an anti-tariff guy, but I'm the exact opposite. There is no other way I could have stopped them other than, what am I going to do, negotiate with Mexico or China? You're not going to get anything from that.
So that is the president on Bloomberg yesterday with a host, John Mikulawat, whatever his name is, Mikulawat, who's not a fan. And Trump said, I don't know if it's true or not, he said, my staff didn't even tell me how much of an anti-Trumper you were. But in front of a live audience that mostly liked Trump, he went to bat strongly and confidently for his economic proposals and plans. And clearly when he talks about tariffs, it is a negotiating tool. He can't say it because it ruins your negotiating tool. Garrett Ventry joins us now, founder and president of GRV Strategies, work with a lot of great people on the Republican side, including Senator Chuck Grassley. Garrett, welcome back.
Hey, how are you, Brian? It's good to be with you, as
so
always.
So Trump went into hostile territory yesterday over in Bloomberg, talking about the economy. He did that before. It's been three or four times he's done that. Your thoughts about his plans that Wall Street Journal doesn't seem to like?
Yeah, I mean, the Wall Street Journal doesn't like anything that's for the middle class. They like everything that's for corporations. Their entire opinion pieces are about them. They've been wrong over and over again on, you know, Paul Ryan's plans to slash Social Security and those type of things that voters just do not like. You're seeing Republicans now across the country. If you look at the Republican Party of 2012 on trade, pushing through these trade agreements. TPP was one. And obviously even dating back to NAFTA, Trump tapped into something in 2016 and realized that, you know, the orthodoxy of the D.C., New York City establishment Republicans on trade was wrong. He also did the same thing on tariffs here, right? You're seeing this like across the board. And this whole idea that we don't know if Trump's tariffs would fuel inflation, these things we actually do. He did this during his entire presidency, and inflation wasn't an issue. So the Wall Street Journal is completely out of touch here with Republican voters, and you're seeing that more and more as years go by.
Didn't President Biden leave most of them in place?
Correct. Yeah, they can't be that bad.
And here's the thing. I think that even if you weren't for Trump on trade, and even if you were more the traditional Reagan,
sure.
Reagan place or George H.W. Bush sure. place, when the pandemic hits and we didn't make anything ourselves and had to depend mostly on China and Vietnam, that had to be the necessary security wake-up call. So that worked to Trump's agenda, which was he thinks is America's agenda.
100%. And for him, it is about putting American workers first. You're seeing this with, you know, unions not endorsing Harris. They're not endorsing Trump, but they're not endorsing Harris. That's
which
a big
is huge
deal.
For
That's
Republicans.
A huge deal. It shows
what
that
about the Arab newspaper over
exactly.
in Michigan?
So again, you're seeing a lot of working class, different coalitions. You're seeing African-American voters. Harris is doing worse with them. You're talking about she's getting about 78% of African-American voters in a New York Times. Well, that seems like a lot. But Biden and Clinton and Obama were getting over 90%. Same with Hispanic voters. She's only beating Trump by 14. You're talking about Biden and Hillary beat Trump by over 30 with Hispanic voters. So clearly his working class message on tax cuts for the middle class, on bringing manufacturing jobs back, on growing the economy, right. solving inflation, tariffs, these things are working. And people that are moderating panels at Bloomberg and writing opinion pieces for The Wall Street Journal are a tad out of touch here.
Right. And one thing about it, you know, Trump never looks unconfident. I mean, whether he's going with Caitlin Collins, who hates him, and CNN, which despises him.
Yep.
And then he goes on with this guy at Bloomberg. But by the way, for some reason, he blew off Joe Kernan, who's a big supporter of his at CNBC. Do you have any idea why?
I don't know exactly what happened there. I don't know if there's a conflict.
Because now he's angry.
Yeah. He should do that show. I mean, I think when President Trump is talking about his economic agenda, he's winning. People like his economic agenda, even if they don't necessarily like him and they don't like his style. You're looking – every poll shows he was leading Biden by wide margins, and he's beating Harris by wide margins on the economy and inflation. Those are the two driving issues that voters are going to go to the polls about.
Yeah, here's a little more of the sparring. Cut one.
If you add up all the promises you've made and your plans would add $7.5 trillion to the debt, that's more than twice the total for Vice President Harris. You're on course to push up debt up to 150% of GDP. You know, this is a very business-like audience.
Yeah.
Why should they trust you with that?
Because we're about growth. She's got no growth whatsoever, and we're all about growth. We're going to bring companies back to our country. We're going to bring the companies back. We're going to lower taxes still further for companies that are going to make their product in the USA. We're going to protect those companies with strong tariffs.
He believes the tariffs is going to force them to bring their manufacturing back. They're going to sit down there with their boards and say it's no longer pays to be in Ireland. And he believes by saying 1,000% or 100%, they'll go, that's extraordinary in the economics class, but not if you're negotiating. You know, to build a building or to buy a plane, that's the way he approaches things. But it's tough to sell, Garrett, for a guy like you who wants to package things because they want finished programs.
Right.
He go, how do you package negotiation? Because he says this, get it high, and then you go in and negotiate. When you come down, it was already higher than you wanted.
Right.
That's not what you usually get from the traditional, like Senator Chuck Grassley, who will tell you what's going to happen next in Iowa.
Sure. No, totally. And I think with Trump is most politicians say all these nice, rosy, dandy things. We're going to lower taxes. We're going to get inflation under control. We're going to solve the border. We're going to, solve wars, all these different things. Everybody says this. Politicians repeat empty promises all the time. The difference with Trump is you have a 4-year track record on the economy.
Right.
You have a 4-year track record on what he do on tax cuts, on what he do on growth, on what he do on trade, on what he do on a host of issues here. And so, Bloomberg News and, Goldman Sachs running and crunching numbers, with nerds in a back room is not necessarily the same as someone who's been a CEO, who's been a president, has a proven track record on the economy. And so I do think it's easy to sell. You're selling the Trump economy that we've seen before. We've seen him in these negotiations with other countries, whether it's on the NATO situation with getting other countries to pay more, whether it's on the tariff situation with China, whether it's on bringing back manufacturing jobs. We've seen Trump do it before, and he'll do it again.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, because do you believe right now it is too close to call?
I think it's a close race. I mean, I think anyone who gets this complacency and this inevitability, we saw inevitability in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. That didn't work out well. We saw it in the 2022 midterm elections for Republicans. You know, you had Republicans going on your show constantly
Red
saying
wave.
We're going to get 40, 50 seats. We didn't get that. We barely got a very slim majority. I think Trump has a slight advantage, but you can't take anything for granted. The reason why is twofold. Again, one, I think he's making gains with black voters. With Hispanic voters, that's a key kind of chip away at the Democrat coalition. That's a big deal for him. And these swing states that are close, for example, in 2016, Donald Trump just overperforms polls. He does. In 2016, ABC News 538 average had Hillary winning Pennsylvania anywhere from 3 to 7 points. Trump won by one. In 2020, they had Biden winning Wisconsin by 8.3 points. Biden won by under a percent. So the point is, if these polls that show Donald Trump up one or two in Pennsylvania, down one in Wisconsin, that's not a good sign for Harris traditionally, because Trump typically overperforms the polls, and he's doing better with these key coalitions and demographics that typically Republicans don't do well with.
So the thing that strikes me is with women, he does have a disparity. He's probably trailing where he was in 2020, depending on the poll. But a lot of it has to do with abortion. So abortion's there. He says, I'm for exceptions. I am not for a nationwide ban. And I'm for states making the decision. But women say, what about my body autonomy? One thing that nobody says, maybe you could tell me why. What about the baby, the life of the baby? Does that matter at all? And when do you think, do you say to Kamala Harris, if you were debating her, when do you think a baby is a human being? What week do you say, okay, that's murder? You tell me. No one ever brings it up, because that is the third rail of what it used to be a third rail topic. How do you feel about that?
No, I think that's a great question. I think Republicans need to do a better job playing offense on abortion. We're constantly playing defense, especially after Roe v. Wade was overturned, right? And there is a...
Well, the pro-life movement kind of melted. Where are they?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them, too. You know, I think with the pro-life movement here, there unfortunately is unrealistic expectations. I mean, to ban abortion in the Senate alone, let's just get rid of the House. The House, you got to get a simple majority. Let's say you're able to get out of the House. You need 60 senators. We don't have 60 Republican senators. We're not going to have 60 Republican senators. And you have Murkowski and Collins, who are pro-choice.
Yeah. There's probably
people,
more.
Yeah, you have other people that are going to be in cycle, like Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Joni Ernst. Are they going to want to vote for a six-week ban or a 15? They're not. And so I think that part is problematic here. So I do think you're right, though. Their reporters need to do a better job on this with Harris and Walz, and I think Republicans need to go on offense, because there is Democrats are not answering for, do they believe it's okay to abort a baby up to 40 weeks, right? Because a lot of the policies you're seeing in place in these states, in California and Minnesota, some of these blue states do pretty much allow for that, but they're not having to answer for that. And I think that is a question that Republicans should go on offense about. That's a great idea.
Am I in a bubble, or is Tim Walz one of the worst picks you've ever seen?
He's
and
terrible.
Do you think Democrats are talking about this?
They are. I've got Democrat friends that do talk about this. I think if she picked Josh Shapiro, I think, you know, that puts Pennsylvania in a very, very good place.
Do you lose
for
Michigan
her.
Because of anti-Semitism?
Maybe you do, and you might lose it still until now. You're even seeing a lot of, again, you know, Arab Americans. Rick Grinnell is doing a great job of this in Michigan, kind of on the ground. But I do think that, you know, Walz looked great when he was going on MSNBC bashing Trump auditioning for the job. The problem is, his resume is, like, you know, not as bad as George Santos, but, you know, he's lied about his military service. He's lied about being in China, Tiananmen Square.
Got an award in Nebraska, never got the award.
And the interesting thing about Tiananmen Square is, like, he said, oh, I'm a knucklehead. I mean, what does that mean?
That'd be if, like, that was your client, what would you say?
You got to own these things and say, listen, I misspoke, or I got, you know, whatever it is, and just say I wasn't there. But the problem is, that's like someone saying, and, you know, I was in ground zero at 9/11, and it's like finds out that you were in Texas in undergrad. So for me, I think he's deeply flawed on some of his, you know, on some of his character and resume issues. And he's really actually put the campaign in some bad spots. They've had to clarify they don't believe in abolishing the Electoral College, something he said. So I think he's been a disaster. And J.D. Vance cleaned his clock.
Oh, yeah. In a calm, decisive way. And I think that's. Maybe that's a glimpse into the future. It might not be so personal in the future.
Right.
Who knows? So they did Cato did a study, and they say fiscally, who's been the most responsible and irresponsible governor? Minnesota, Tim Walz, scores an F, got a 19 out of 100. Guess who's second? New York, Kathy Hochul, got a 29. So is that
shocking.
Fiscally irresponsible governor is the perfect pick to be the next vice president of the United States. Also, he couldn't load a gun. I'm not a gun guy.
Yeah.
But if you say that's your gun, you remember buying it, and it's a Beretta, a foreign gun, and you lead a hunt, you can't even load it. I had gun people writing me and say, did you see this video? I haven't seen it.
Sure.
Now, when you try to, you know, it's about optics and ads. Is that a big problem?
It is a big problem. You'd think you'd practice that.
She's playing man card.
Yeah, you got to practice it beforehand, make sure you know how to load the gun, make sure you know how to use the gun. So I mean, Tim Walz, he's kind of like waving around, jumping up and down like a cheerleader. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's many great male cheerleaders across our country. And
I'm sure they are.
That's great. But I don't think that's going to appeal to your man problem. I don't know about you. So I think that's a problem there for him. He's not really this manly man guy. The other problem is you're talking about Harris and Walz have no experience on growing in an economy in a way that is persuasive or helpful to people. That stat you just pulled out is the worst, you know, run state.
Cato Institute.
And Harris was a senator for a few years. She's been VP where her job is to, you know, break ties. And, you know, she was the border czar and didn't do a great job on that. So, again, this is experience ticket with Donald Trump, who's grown the economy and been a CEO, and two people who've never really created a job in their life.
All right. Before we go, I want to know what you'll do, but I also want you to hear this.
Yeah.
Realizing they're bleeding men, the president did the Harris-Faulkner Forum, which is you're going to see shortly.
Right. Good for Harris.
Okay. Yeah. And it's good for him. Let's talk to women directly. They were supposedly independents, undecided. So they want to get the man thing going.
Right.
So tell me if this ad would get Garrett Ventry's checkmark.
I know what you're talking about.
I'm man enough to be emotional in front of my wife.
In front of my kids.
In front of my horse.
I love women.
I love women who support their families.
Women who decide not to have families.
Women who take charge.
And I'm man enough to help them win.
And I think one man likes cats. So these are all actors.
Yep.
And do they want to make us laugh? Are they trying to be a parody? Because I had to keep hearing this. I heard it on the radio for the first time. I thought I misheard it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the video of it, too, I think, on social media. And I thought it was like an SNL parody thing. And then I did a little research. It's a real ad. No, I mean, this isn't appealing to men. Any person who's on the fence about this, again, on Walz, on Harris – and running ads like this is not going to be effective. And so I think she's got a problem. I think that's why she wants to go on Rogan. That's why she's going on Brett Baer here, I believe today, right, in a few hours. So
yeah,
I think she knows she has a problem with Republican-leaning men, with independent men, and maybe even some Democrat men. And that's why she's doing these more risky interviews. And we'll see if it pays off for her. But ads like that certainly aren't going to help.
Lastly, what would you have Trump do? How does Trump close if he was your client?
I think if I was the president, I would continue to focus on two very simple things. One is he has the record. He's done it before on the economy, on the border, on solving these wars that we have overseas. The second thing is continue to tie her to Joe Biden's unpopular agenda. This is not just Joe Biden, and we're wondering what Harris would do. It's the Biden-Harris agenda, and the part B of that is you're proposing all these beautiful, rosy things, just like he is. No tax on tips, she's saying. She's saying expanding Social Security and Medicare, you know, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, lowering taxes, paid family leave. All this sounds really good, Brian. The problem is you've been there for almost 4 years. Why haven't you done
it? Keep saying it.
Correct.
Keep saying that.
That's the argument against her.
All right. And where's the Senate?
I think the Senate, I think we get 51 baseline. I think, you know, West Virginia's off the map. Montana's closing there. I think that you're seeing Bernie Moreno make good strides in Ohio. I think Michigan, Wisconsin, and even Arizona are going to be a lot closer than
people
think.
You worried about Texas and Ted Cruz?
I'm not worried about Texas and Ted Cruz. I think Ted Cruz will close the gap. You have President Trump on the top of the ticket who's performing there. I think he wins. There's a lot of Democrat money there, but I think he gets over the finish line.
Garrett Ventry, thanks so
much. Thanks,
Brian. Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm a knucklehead at times.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You just mentioned Putin, though. There's been this controversy of the past week. Can you say yes or no whether you have talked to Vladimir Putin since you stopped being president?
Well, I don't comment on that, but I will tell you that. If I did, it's a smart thing. If I'm friendly with people, if I have a relationship with people, that's a good thing, not a bad thing, in terms of a country.
So that is, there was rumors in Bob Woodward's book that he's talked to Vladimir Putin 7 times. So what's the big deal? I talked to everybody. And by the way, a lot came to see him, but Vladimir Putin is evil as he gets. I look at him as Stalin 2.0. I have no interest in dealing with him. I don't think he'd ever be trusted. You do have to find a way to end that war, and talking to him wouldn't be a negative. But don't let anyone spin you that Vladimir Putin not that bad or we just misunderstood. Allison, Peekskill, New York, are we ready? My car is full. I'm driving to this one. We're not flying. You have books in your – we're going to be able to sign books and everything, take pictures. But do you have everything that you need?
I believe so. Is my question, is the T-shirt cannon all fired up?
So we have T-shirts, Stay Within Yourself, which is the philosophy that I live by. which we're still trying to figure out. A lot of people pick different passages or axioms. That's my inspiration. So we put it on a T-shirt. It's selling like crazy. But to help us to not to look like we're picking favorites, we have a T-shirt, Karen.
And you let Rick fire it into the crowd.
Right. And it's very exciting. It gives you that sense of a minor league baseball game. BrianKilmeade.com, Peak School of New York, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Do you think it's a good show?
The best one you will ever see.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Don't move. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Or you can move, but just make sure to put your AirPods in or stay in your car or bring your phone with you. Put it on speaker when you're walking the dog, whatever it is, because we got a big hour coming your way. And keep in mind, too, we got three new stations, including Peekskill, New York, WLNA, 1420 AM. And I'll be in Peekskill on Sunday. Keep in mind, too, this hour, we're going to be joined by Martha McCallum, and she's going to bring us right through. Martha will preview Brett Baer's big interview with me today. Brett's going to sit down with the vice presidential nominee. So that'll be great. And keep in mind, we're going to look at the president's schedules. Both of them are kind of busy today. They haven't been that busy. So Harris Faulkner right now is doing a town hall on Fox News. She taped it yesterday. J.D. Vance delivers remarks at a rally in Pennsylvania. Williamsport, a famous Little League World Series site. J.D. Vance delivers remarks at a rally in Wilmington, North Carolina. And he'll be doing that 3 hours later. And then President Trump will be doing a town hall at 10 o'clock tonight at Univision. So these are undecided independent voters. So he's going to get some tough questions. And I think that he kind of likes that to a degree. For Harrison Waltz, 10 o'clock, they are doing a press conference ahead of Univision's town hall with Donald Trump. So they already taped theirs, I think. So Trump had to put his off. He thought when the hurricane hit, he thought it would be inappropriate. But he's a man of his word when it comes to this. And he said, I'll show up. And he did. The vice president will be arriving Trenton, New Jersey, right around us, that at 2:25. And then she'll deliver remarks at a campaign event in Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania. We were there, Allison. I was there with Dave McCormick, Senate nominee candidate. And it is Washington's Crossing, where he crossed the Delaware, walked 9 miles, and took out the British forces, made mostly of mercenaries, Hessian mercenaries, German mercenaries. Brett Baer is going to interview her tonight at 5 o'clock. Then they're going to quickly turn it around. They promised not to edit it, and that's going to be on special report. The vice president then will go to Trenton, New Jersey, en route to Milwaukee. So that's where we stand. A couple other things I think it's important to point out. The polls got to be close because they seem to be at panic bookings. Now, I'd do the same thing. If I'm trailing with men, I would be with Charlemagne the God, too. If you want black men that tend to lean liberal, that's where you go. Plus, they're friends. And then if you say, I'm trailing overall from where President Biden was, where President Obama was, I want a big audience. I want an audience that might not love Trump, even though I think most are voting for him at Fox. I'm going to go in front of them. And our tone today, I think, is going to be conciliatory. I think he's going to come out. Brett, how you doing? Congratulations on the trajectory of your career. As you know, I got 3 weeks to become president of the United States. What questions do you have for me? Other people are convinced I am delusional, that there is no way she has that tone, that she's going to be coming out aggressive to show that she's presidential. Where do you land on this?
I think she'll be friendly, maybe not as friendly as congratulations on your career. But I mean, she's not going to want to come out combative, or that's not a good strategy if you're coming to Fox to try to win over any, like, some of our independent viewers, to come out and just be overly combative. I don't think that'll win anyone over.
Right. And I think so, too. And I think that she doesn't really get pressed on a lot of things. And I want to bring you to one comment she made about the border. So a comment that Charlemagne God said is like, look, you got to start absorbing the fact that you guys broke the border. The criticism that you have let 8 million people in. She didn't come back with those stats. But the criticism that they had that the border is a vulnerability, she would not even absorb that. She says, no, that's not the case. One of the first things we did is actually crack down on the border. And she actually said that she had legislation and blamed Congress for not handling it. Here's what she said about that. Cut 13.
Doesn't the Biden administration have to take some blame for the border, though? A lot of the blame? Because, I mean, the first 3 years, y'all did get a lot of things wrong with the border.
No, Charlamagne, within hours of being inaugurated, the first bill we passed before we did the Inflation Reduction Act, before we did the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, before we did the Safer Communities Act to deal with gun violence, first thing we dropped was a bill to fix the broken immigration system, which, by the way, Trump did not fix when he was president.
See, she's so wrong. Trump did extremely well on the border. Everybody knows what he did to the border. Everybody knows he had to repurpose defense funds to build the wall. Everyone knows he's got about 400 miles built, reconditioned, built it. That's what he completed. We know that. Everybody knows that we paid for wall that she laid on the ground. Everybody knows that they reversed 94 executive orders that Trump put forward to seal up that border. And on this piece of legislation, it was put up there in 2021. Yes, it came early. And know what it was? A pathway to citizenship for so many, being politically correct with so many detainees that were here, giving legal immigrants rights, almost nothing on the border itself, repealed Remain in Mexico, and they wanted a pathway for citizenship that would take 8 years for anybody here already. It was so good, so powerful, so successful, so well written that not the Democratic House or Senate brought it up. And when she comes out and tells Brett that we had bipartisan immigration legislation set and ready to go and Trump killed it, the rebuke has got to be 8 Democratic senators voted against it. Over 30 Republicans were on the record, and Trump has denied playing any role in the end of Senator Langford's plan. And the problem is there was nothing for unaccompanied minors. There was no Remain in Mexico. There was no money to complete the wall or to put more money towards the wall. More border agents, but more money would flow to NGOs. And they would take unqualified people at the border who were not judges, essentially deputize them and let them decide on their everybody's asylum status. Who would decide that? The president. Look at the criteria. When it comes to the criteria, who would you trust? The view of Trump or Biden? The fear was if this passed and Biden was still president, or Kamala Harris now, that they would have discretion. And the discretion would be, come one, come all. We've already seen it. About her sticking with the talking points. Cut 12.
But what do you say to people who say you stay on the talking points?
I would say you're welcome. I mean, listen, here's the thing. I love having conversations, which is why I'm so happy to be with you this afternoon. And the reality is that there are certain things that must be repeated to ensure that I have everyone know what I stand for and the issues that I think are at stake in this election.
Mm-hmm.
And so it requires repetition. You know, some people say that until someone has heard the same thing at least 3 times, it just doesn't stay with you. So repetition is important. And for that reason, yes, at my rallies, I say the same thing when I go to Detroit as I do in Philly, as I do wherever I am, to make sure that people hear and receive what I think are some of the most critical issues that are at stake in this election.
Right. And that problem is what she said in the past and never fully explained how she's changed. You tell a bunch of auto workers in Michigan, I'm for the end of gas-powered vehicles, which she's on the record as saying, don't expect any votes. And what about this? Cut 19.
So will everyone have to drive electric cars?
Well, by my plan, by 2045, we will have basically zero emission vehicles only, 100%.
Okay, fantastic. You know who you lost? Well, the auto unions, and no, you could sit there and say management's going to vote for you, but the people aren't. And you think Trump is going to ban electric vehicles? No. He's going to say, you like electric cars? Try it. You know, Elon Musk is my number one benefactor. He has the best car, the Tesla. Innovative, didn't need government help. Huge in China, built these terminals. That might be problematic, but I don't care. Bring it up. Talk about it. China's trying to do it better, stealing his intellectual property. Let's have it out. But I'm not anti-electric, but I'm not mandated electric. Do you want to really be part of that? We don't know what to do with the batteries when they're done. We don't know how long these batteries last. And they don't really work in really cold weather. That's a pretty big deal. And lastly on this, Charlamagne the God earlier in the day, he hosts the Breakfast Club, but he's on iHeart, who carries a lot of his podcasts. And the podcasts that not only he's not on, but the ones he runs. He said this on the Brilliant Idiots podcast, Cut 20, yesterday.
There's nothing about the poll numbers that we're seeing right now that should make anybody feel like she got this in.
Remember those poll numbers with Hillary.
Remember those poll numbers with Hillary. And I keep telling people this campaign feels more Hillary-ish than it does Obama-ish.
Right. But she never, she really didn't do much out of her comfort zone. But she had such a machine, knew the issues. She probably would have been great on Fox because she'll know that legislation in 2021. I'm sure she doesn't. Do you think she knows the details of the legislation? Langford, who I know we have these great affiliates in Oklahoma, Senator Langford, one of the nicest men, smartest guys you're ever going to want to meet. But a lot of it was just not palatable to Republicans. And he said, I made a mistake. I said, what was it? He said, because they had me do the negotiation. If we expanded, it would have slowed down. I wanted to get aid to Ukraine as I thought Ukraine needed aid, and they did. So if I slowed down and factored more people in and got some buy-in, the aid wouldn't have got to Ukraine and Israel as quick. So I did it myself with Murphy and Sinema. Now, Democrats also, like the AOCs of the world, the Bernie Sanders, they didn't like it because they thought it was too tough. They got too many border agents. They don't like border agents. But it wasn't. So we're going to come back. We're going to take a time out so I have some time with Martha. We're going to talk about the vulnerabilities of both candidates. One, black men, when it comes to Kamala Harris, and what people have said, you know, if you need 92% of any segment, maybe you're depending too much on one to deliver, and that's not healthy. That, and we're going to talk about the president's vulnerability with women. And the town hall, we'll take some highlights from the town hall taking place right now. And we'll preview what President, what Vice President Harris will say, most likely say to Brett Baer. Busy show. So glad you're here. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're back. Martha McCallum's here with all her notes, getting ready for her show at 3 o'clock. She also knows her colleague, her election colleague. Everyone else is your colleague, too. But Brett Baer is going to have an interview at 5 o'clock with Kamala Harris. Right now, we're seeing the town hall with Harris Faulkner. And then, you know, what I noticed, too, is I don't think it's getting much press. But speaking of press, we do know that it looks like Kamala Harris is having a press conference today with the vice president's nominee. Walton Harris hold a press conference ahead of Univision's town hall with Donald Trump in Doral. So isn't that interesting? Did you know that?
No, actually. I'm not sure that is.
Because I took this out of my notes. I've not heard anything about it. They're going to meet at, they have 10 o'clock Eastern time. They'll hold a press conference ahead of Univision's
town
hall.
Oh, yes, I do have that. Yeah, right. I do have it. So it's at 10 a.m.
Yeah, so that they're both together again. I don't know why she can't do one by herself.
Yeah. She hasn't held a press conference. We'll see what kind of shape this takes. And the only other time she went on, you know, her first big interview, she did with Walt by her side with Dana Bash, which feels like a long time ago, but it was right after she moved into Biden's spot. So, you know, you can see them really driving hard and really trying to get out there. Whoever is driving the strategy for Harris right now is saying, we're going to do Brett Baer. We're going after all these male voters. We're just going to, you know, try to turn this thing around. And one of the things that fascinates me is what we'll look at when we finally get in 20 days, a look at the exit polls, right? The Fox opinion analysis as people come out of the polls. What are you going to watch when it's the late decider voters? It's never been this tight, right? So who are these late deciders is what's on everyone's mind, even if it's, you know, a small percentage of people who say, I decided within the last week or in the last few days. Those are the people that they're going after right now. So is that person a shy woman Trump voter? Or is it a shy Kamala male voter? And those are the people who are holding their cards close to the vest who will decide this election.
Just by being a man, I'll give you some insight that I think you do know men too. But no one really would be shy of saying I'm for Harris. They would find saying they were for Biden. I mean, I see lawn signs that go upstate New York, travel around. I don't think that people would be shy. I think especially people that are so vehemently anti-Trump, I don't think they would ever be shy about saying I'm Biden or I'm Harris.
Well, it depends.
I could see Trump because
it depends on where you're hanging out and whether or not people feel comfortable with it. I mean, for example, you know, I mean, I live in suburban New Jersey, so there's not a lot of not too much creative tension about what's going to happen in New Jersey. But there are no signs anywhere in my town. People do not talk about who they are voting for. They do not. And I would imagine that you're seeing a lot of that in suburban Philadelphia, some of it in, you know, the suburbs around Pittsburgh, other places that are going to decide this election, Michigan, perhaps, where people are a little bit less open about who they're voting for.
Yeah, I mean, the latest polling among black men, 62% support Harris, 25% support Trump. And I thought this was an interesting perspective. If your metric for winning means you need 90 or 80% of any one group, I think you're going about things wrong. I mean, 92% for Barack Obama. Yeah. So, I mean, here's Ed O'Keefe of CBS looking at this issue. Cut 21.
There are signs Harris might struggle to turn out black men, as a higher number are signaling interest in former President Donald Trump.
A lot of black males are not into the Harris campaign. And I think this should have been done a while ago.
We have tens of thousands of people that do not intend to vote and don't give a damn about Kamala, Trump, or anyone else because they don't see how this campaign, this candidacy, makes one bit of difference in their lives.
This group knows they need to explain the differences between Harris and Trump.
Gut check. Is she going to win?
I believe she's going to nearly pull it off.
I believe she's going to win.
I think it's touch and go right now. I see shades of the Hillary Clinton campaign with the arrogance of a Democratic Party out of touch with the electorate.
I believe she's going to win.
So I know Lawrence did a bunch of barbershops too, goes into the black community where men are, and it's all across the board. But these people are speaking up going, listen, don't count me automatic. I don't know how profitable. I haven't talked to people. I don't know how helpful Barack Obama's comments were last week.
No, I mean, I don't think scolding people that you're trying to win over is helpful. And I think you saw a lot of pushback to those comments. I think any group of people as a woman, and, you know, if someone said to me, you have to vote for this woman, that gets my back up, right? Whoever she is, you know, whether it's local election or I'm going to vote for the person I think is best for me, best for my family, best for the economy, best for national security, best for education, which it pains me has been almost a non-issue in this election. And I keep thinking to myself, if you want to reach women in suburban areas, you better address the enormous decline in education in this country. So I don't understand why that's not a bigger issue. I would have loved to have heard more candidates talk about it. Maybe they'll try to cram it in the next 20 days. But, you know, I do. It's very interesting listening to those men's comments. And I think everyone has to be very careful about the bubble that you exist in, because it's those bubbles are more impermeable than ever.
That's why I always flip around.
Same. I do, too. And you have to realize that there is all of this. You know, there's a lot of anti-Trump motivation out there, as there was in 2020. So we'll see.
We'll come back. I have a theory on the women's vote. I'm going to share it with you only on radio.
Good.
Shelters up 21% since Biden took over. Electricity 28. Energy overall 29. Gas up 29. Auto insurance up 57%. Real wages down 1.4. This is what Donald Trump. This is why people are buying Trump. They remember how it used to be.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If I run this country, if I'm going to be president of this country, I'm going to put a 100, 200, 2,000% tariff. They're not going to sell one car into the United States because we're not going to destroy our country. Because I know you're an anti-tariff guy, but I'm the exact opposite. There is no other way I could have stopped them other than, what am I going to do, negotiate with Mexico or China? You're not going to get anything from that.
So the president of the United States run into Bloomberg and Martha McCallum. You came from a business background. Do you think the president really didn't know this host was aggressively against him and that he would be walking into such an aggressive interview? Because he said, my people didn't tell me.
Kind of reminds you of the Black Women Journalists Forum, or the Black Journalists Forum, I guess, that he walked into, where he kind of got slammed ambushed when he walked in the door. I thought this was interesting, though, and it didn't really throw him off of his game at all. So I found it interesting. He knows who he is. He sticks to what he believes in. And this whole tariff issue, I feel like people have just a memory hole on this, because what he does is he threatens very high tariffs. It's the open bid. It's the open gambit in the negotiation. And he also did this on the border, which he just spoke about a little while ago with Harris Faulkner, where he said, okay, Mexico, I'm going to slam such egregious tariffs on you. You're our second biggest trading partner. It's not going to, you know, it's going to be horrible for you. Or you can put 28,000 Mexican police on the border. So they did. This is the way he negotiates. 100% tariffs. What are you going to do about it? And that's the opening gambit, okay? So you can't calculate.
Can I just say, that's what they do. They take the 100% and they go, okay, give me my pencil.
Exactly.
And they get out a pad.
Then they figure out the numbers because they're, you know, that's the way they approach everything. But you can't approach it that way. It's not a practical matter of, okay, what would this tariff, how would it impact the U.S. economy? It's a negotiation. It's an opening gambit.
Right. So this is what they're talking about today. And one of the questions we saw in the promo is about abortion. And it's the number two issue, according to the poll we're looking at, about what women care about. And they say, well, you know, we want freedom to make our own decisions about our own bodies. I understand that. And Trump keeps saying, I return to the states. And we go back and forth like this. And I'm wondering, and you could tell me I'm wrong, and say it's not going to hunt, Brian. There's a reason why people don't bring it up. At one point, do you say, I hear you about your body, and I get it. We had the same blowback when it comes to vaccines and masks, and people say, how dare you tell me what to do? But at one point, the thing that makes this different is there's another life involved. And at what point do you say to yourself, as a woman, and as or someone who has a stand of pro-abortion, do you say, well, if we abort here, a baby dies? When is that baby alive to you? Do women, if I said that as a candidate and a woman asked me a question, well, how dare you tell me what to do with my body? If I said that, do you think I look callous, selfish, and unaware of how sexist that sounds?
So, you know, it depends on where people are coming from, right? If you're saying that to someone who is pro-life, that's going to go one way. If you're saying it to a woman, I always feel that is the question that puts people in a very difficult position, right? And what I'm really amazed by recently is that the same people in some ways who are supporting, you know, very extensive and liberal abortion rights are the same people who, you know, want to show you their daughter's, you know, picture of a baby at 6 weeks that they just got back from the doctor. So I feel very personally about this issue. So I understand that not all women agree with me. The point that I would make is, yes, it went back to the states. Also keep in mind, 60% of abortions in this country are done by a medical pill that arrives in the mail. 60%. Those pills are accessible to anyone across this country. I've been pregnant 3 times. I cannot imagine not knowing I was pregnant at, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks. 6 is, you know, I can see a scenario where you might not know at that, but you know fairly early if you are, you know, in tune with your body at all. So I think that this issue needs to be explained. Has always been. I think that the GOP has mangled this issue in a big way, but they should be willing to talk about, well, what is the cutoff point? What is an okay cut? Why can't we be like Europe? Why can't we be at 16 weeks? Like, you know, the rest of the Western civilization world.
Right. When Lindsey Graham brought that up, he was vilified.
I know, because people were terrified that it was going to be a negative election issue for them. And I remember in the midterms asking people who were working on the midterm process, why don't you talk about this issue? Because we've already lost on that. We're focusing on other things. So, you know, and I think the way it's articulated is extremely important. And I don't think anyone really has been courageous enough to really come at it head on in a successful way.
Like if you ask Kamala Harris as a man, you're a man candidate, you're competing against her, and you say, I know you're for reproductive rights, right? Absolutely. Okay, I heard you say that. So when does reproductive rights switch to killing an infant, one born? So you believe that baby is only a baby once it's born. I'm just answer that. Can you answer that question? What would she say?
She would say it's between a woman and her doctor. This is a woman's decision. The government can't tell her when that moment is. It's between a woman. And that's what I believe she would say. And you know what? I was out for a run the other day. I saw this banner on someone, you know, like a political banner that said, you know, I'm voting to protect my daughter's rights. And I thought, is this your daughter who is 16 or 24 or your daughter who is 8 weeks old? In your body. At what point does that little girl's wow. rights matter? When do those little girls' rights matter? Women's rights? Those future women who are little baby girls who are 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks in utero?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we're at. And I think if Republicans just want to run this out and go, let's wait for every state to vote and then soon it'll be in our rearview mirror. I don't think it's going to. They caught the car and they're waiting for the car to pass them now. And the car just keeping up with them. And Democrats don't want that car to leave.
No, they don't. But I think in time they'll realize that most people who want an abortion in America can get an abortion in America. First of all, 60% are done by pill that you can get through the mail. I mean, think about that. That's an extraordinary. The number of clinic abortions, the way people think of abortion that happened in this country, has diminished enormously. Since that pill became available, those abortion pills became available, mifepristone, which the Supreme Court upheld.
Right. So that's off the board now. They don't even bring that up. Correct? There's two things, because that was hot, an issue before during the primary. Lastly, the other issue that nobody brings up is the president's legal problems. Do you notice that? What they must have seen with the polls is they did not even embrace, outside MSNBC.
No, you're right.
Jack Smith. When Jack Smith came out and that judge goes, look. Everyone goes, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. No, I think that the pushback against what has become known as lawfare is real. And I think they went way over their skis. When people saw that enormous, you know, $400-500 million judgment on the real estate deal in New York, where nobody lost a dime, and it was
not
all decided
complained.
By a judge, no jury involved. And when people saw, you know, the agreement between Stormy Daniels and Trump that was signed and then suddenly becomes something that produces how many counts of
30
guilty?
Plus,
30 plus counts of guilty. I believe it turned out to be a wash.
Right. And by the way, an expensive wash.
I mean, absolutely.
It cost the city a ton of money. It cost Trump a ton of money. But actually, in the end, they started having money cascading in. Yeah. You know what it also did? And we're not at the point where we're looking back at the election cycle, but it swamped all the other candidates because DeSantis is out there on the road in Iowa talking a speech. He's like, nobody's following me. Nikki Haley.
Well,
no
maybe
one's,
that's, you know, I mean, if they were really smart, that might have been what Democrats wanted, you know, to sort of flood
that's
the
really,
gates. You'd have
that's
to be
really
very,
giving
them very
a lot of
cagey.
Credit.
But, you know, once they started seeing that it was working for him, that every time he was indicted, it elevated him. And I do think, you know, you look back at all of those people who ran and they'll be around in 4 years, regardless of what happens, but they put themselves on the map.
Who's on your show?
So we're going to have Shannon Bream and Tyrus talk about this panel that's going on in Atlanta right now, which I think is going to be a really interesting combination, and about this gender gap, this male female gender gap that is not about race. This is what I find so interesting. I think the country is more divided on economic and gender lines than it is on race anymore. And I think in some ways that's a good thing.
It's a great way
for the country because – and every time people try to put folks in a box about, well, you're a black voter, you're a white voter, you're a young voter, you're an old voter. People say, no, I'm a person who cares about the economy. I'm a person who cares about immigration. I'm a person who cares about abortion in many cases as well. So I'm going to talk to them, which I'm looking forward to. Corey Lewandowski is going to join us. We had Ian Sams yesterday, so we're trying to hear from both campaigns every day in these final 20 days. Coming up, we're also going to take a look at this video from Aurora. Which continues to make the situation there look bad, despite the fact that some quarters think that it's a big nothing.
Do you watch Sunday shows?
Yeah.
So when I saw Martha Raddatz do that, and then Kristen Welker say, "Don't we need to know the cholesterol level on Trump?"
Absolutely.
And it's just astounding. You know what? That showed me that they think that Trump's winning. Because there's almost like a panic and an anger, almost like a tantrum.
Well, I think it's just so close that both sides are panicked. So, you know, but yeah, when I thought when J.D. Vance said to Martha Raddatz, did you hear what you just said? That it's okay.
Do you hear yourself?
He said, do you hear yourself? That it's okay if Venezuelan gangs have taken over a few apartment buildings in a city in America.
Right.
He's absolutely right.
I will bring up Aurora, and now there's another city that is also overrun over in Indiana that they said that they doubled their number because of the Hessians that came in. Haitians, not Hessians. I'm thinking the wrong era. The one with German soldiers from the 1700s. They have come in and overrun a city in Indiana. So I think that's a story. If they could not bring up cats and dogs, that's something that resonates with people. So you can't just tell people that it doesn't matter anymore. And we'll see what happens. This is what I think is going to happen. They're going to make Trump cartoonishly unacceptable. I think America will not run to that. And Kamala Harris, people are going to say, we need to see more. And I think that's where this whole thing is going.
Yeah, I think that she, you know, still has not, as Debbie Dingell said, really defined herself with American voters. When you look at Trump, you see conviction, even though there's, you know, Maggie Haberman saying he's getting more meandering over time and all of that. But you know where he stands. People know what kind of president he is for 4 years. And that's the person that they say they still do not have a clear vision of where she wants to take the country.
All right. So this will help the president. I want you to hear the National Border Patrol Council president yesterday. This is pretty clear that no one buys that Kamala Harris had a great plan in 2021 and a better bipartisan plan to sign on to in 2024. Cut 30, Paul Perez.
America, I have a message for you. If we allow Borders R. Harris to win this election, every city, every community in this great country is going to go to hell. The untold millions of people, unvetted, who she has allowed into this country that are committing murders, rapes, robberies, burglaries, and every other crime will continue to put our country in peril. Only one man can fix that. That is Donald J. Trump. He has always stood.
And he also said there's going to be mass resignations if Trump loses because they can't do this anymore. So I think that matters a lot when it comes to the border. That's the union president going with the Republican candidate who's saying exactly that.
You know, I think it's and you had the firefighters union and the Teamsters both not endorsing, which is really says a lot because they always endorse a Democrat candidate. My mind keeps going back to the Chicago voters, many of whom were Hispanic, talking about how outraged they were about what was happening in their schools and hospitals. Those sound bites.
Martha McCallum, today at 3.
Thank you.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
There is concern Brady's broadcasting gig could be a conflict.
He can announce Raiders games,
but the NFL has taken steps to limit his access around the league. He will not have access to team facilities, players, or coaches. He also cannot criticize officials and other teams on game broadcasts. Brady isn't the first former superstar turned owner in their sport. Michael Jordan, David Beckham, and Derek Jeter all did it too. And he likely won't be the last.
The money has gotten so large for the very best players in the game that it can buy them a seat at the table where there might not have been one before.
As of right now, Brady's job description is unclear, but Raiders majority owner Mark Davis has some ideas.
Although Tom can't play, I think he can help us select a quarterback in the future and potentially trade him as well.
Right. So this is problematic, a little bit of Fox, but I guess they knew it when they was talking to him. What are you going to do? Can't criticize referees?
Or other, players or other teams. Like, how can he call the game in an honest fashion if he can't say, oh, that player messed up there?
He said, I grew up on the field. It's a blessing to know I'll be involved in the greatest league in the world. He thanked Mark Davis for bringing him in. I'm eager to contribute to the organization any way I can. And the Raiders' rich tradition while finding every possible opportunity to improve offering the product to the fans. Now, if, for example, Devontae Adams, the best wide receiver they had, said, I want to be traded, goes to the Jets today. So the Raiders get it for the third-round pick. If it comes up, they lost their best wide receiver. Tom, how do you feel about that? He can't say anything.
He can. I know Tom always wanted to own part of
the
team.
Is it worth it, given a broadcast?
It's just interesting that Fox continues to go forward because how can he have credibility on the air, right?
Next, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones seems to threaten radio host jobs after getting agitated over questions. Listen.
Now, if you think I'm interested in on a damn phone call with you over a radio,
and sitting here and throwing all the good out with the dishwater. You have got to be smoking something over there this morning. I'm not. And I really don't, and I don't even want our listeners to listen to me, to talk about, this is not your job. Your job isn't to let me go over all the reasons that I did something, and I'm sorry that I did it. That's not your job.
Well, my job is to ask why.
Get a job, or I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man.
Jerry, we're trying to figure out why the team is.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding.
So, wow. I mean, I'm not sure. Is this the Cowboys' own radio station? Because if it's not owned, what they do is they pay you a certain amount of money to contribute on the station. They'll pay Eli Manning to call WFAN. They'll call, you know, they had Boomer Esiason do FAN when he was a Jet, and he ends up as a host and all that stuff. But I don't know if he's contractually obligated to call in. But they're not obligated to be gentle with him.
I mean, it goes back. Like, I mean, the average listener or viewer, they want honest media. Yeah. So if you're going to watch or listen to something and think you're never getting the true questions from a sincere place, the show is going to lose credibility.
I thought so. Yeah. One of the best things was Howie Rose with Davey Johnson during all those Mets years when they were good and controversial and getting suspended. They'd have real conversations. But now they all pay to get on. They pay for their radio station. They own the networks, the YES Network. How tough are they going to be in the Yankees? SNY is owned by the Mets. How tough are they going to be in the Mets? That's a common question. I want to get to the bottom of that next. More sports. NFL owners approve Atlanta as the next Super Bowl site. That'll be in 2028. And how about this story I think is important. Washington State's most bizarre laws. This is crazy. Don't use x-rays on shoe-fitting devices. Don't hug. No hugging while driving. Don't harm a carrier of a racer pigeon. No intimidation with a laser. Be wary before Bigfoot hunting. This is a little jokey and a little really, but Washington State feel compelled to pass these laws. Do you feel as though any are out of bounds?
I feel like they should just make the move and take them off the books.
Right. I think so. It would certainly help. We have a lot of other stories, but that's all we have for now. Next time you hear us, we'll be coming to you from Richmond, Virginia. Don't forget to join me this Sunday, 7 p.m. History Liberty Laughs. Come in person, BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. Peekskill, New York.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.